we are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep. Keep us selfish. Keep us sedate.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
We have so much to talk about today, and we are definitely going to get into it all. I have this citizenship test thing that we're going to look at, just the idea of the citizenship test. We're not going to look at a citizenship test. What a boring exercise that would be. It's going to be bad enough just looking at the idea of talking about citizenship and the good citizen, and we'll get into that. We'll do a whole anarchist audit of that, maybe a little bit of news, a couple of things. Before we get into it all, do me a favor and click that like button. Wherever you're finding the video at, wherever you're hearing the audio at, click that like button. And if you're inclined to do so, give it a share as well. It's one of the biggest ways that you can support me. You can also follow along at Toward Anarchy on Facebook and X. And, of course, towardanarchy.com is where it all begins. And if you do ever find yourself at towardanarchy.com, if you've been there before, you'll notice right away that things have changed. It's different. I put some work into it. That's one of the things that I've been up to the last couple of weeks. It's been sort of spotty. There's been plenty of things. I've done plenty of stuff out there, but I haven't taken any time to do this. Spend some quality time, just you and I talking together, as it were. And I'm really excited about it. It's probably what it'll be forever at this point, because it's just as simple and nailed down as I can get it. It doesn't get any more simple than the way I have it. It works on everybody's phone. It's not an app that you can download like some people want. I played around with that idea for a little while, but it's just not necessary when you can just go right to it from any device, and it looks exactly the same and functions exactly the same, and I don't have to write anything extra or special or different, and I'm excited about it. So it looks good. It's clean. It's sharp. It's to the point. And if you dig deep enough, you can still find older pages. So that's kind of cool too. You can see what it looked. That's something that I've done with it the whole way along. You can kind of see the development of the website over the years. If you go the further and further you go back, you see how it's changed. And I decided just not to change it to go back any further than I have on it, because I think that's kind of a neat thing to be able to just look back and see the sort of slow development of the website over time. But enough of the technical geek stuff. At towardanarchy.com, you'll find this episode 2616 is what it'll be, and it's all about the good citizen, and I have some other things that I want to talk about too. It's just a citizenship thing. It's on my mind, of course, because they've got the Supreme Court dealing with the citizenship, the birthright citizenship, that sort of thing. But more importantly than that, closer to home for a lot of people are the sort of 14 states or so that already require a citizenship or a civics test to graduate from high school. So this is something that just happened here in Kansas. They just initiated it. So that has been on my mind, and we'll jump into that. But I wanted to talk about just a couple of other things, just because there's so much going on, really, since the last time we were together. Obviously, a whole war has started and ended, or supposedly, or something has gone to truce. I don't know. I don't pretend to know or even care what happens. I just don't. I don't know what's going on. I'm just being lied to constantly by the media, by the politicians, by the warmongers. And you certainly don't want to get your information from the average idiot on the street, because they're the average idiot on the street, especially the average idiot that believes that war of any kind for any reason necessarily is a good idea. It's certainly not a topic that doesn't have nuance to it. So that's one thing that's gone on, of course, is that it's still going on. It's still playing out, the Strait of Hormuz and all this. And it's really interesting if you look at the progression of this thing over the years, and our support and our non-support and our support for some countries and our being against other countries, and it's just depending on who's in charge in the White House, and it's all just this ridiculous game. I'm kind of sick of it. I'm really sick of it. I just don't care what happens to the Middle East. I do not care about what happens to the Middle East, particularly if America isn't the instrument of what happens in the Middle East, because then it's certainly not my problem. My tax dollars didn't have anything to do with it. All of those things that would tie us as a people to what happens in the Middle East. I don't care about it. I don't want it to happen there. I don't want my freedoms to be there. I don't want our military to be there. I don't want your sons and daughters and my sons and daughters or anybody else's sons and daughters to be there in the middle of this conflict, instigated and antagonized by one obnoxious little state with its just hatred for everything and everyone that isn't exactly like it, and yet we're best friends with them. We think they're just our buddies. Oh gosh, yes. And don't talk about them. Don't speak ill of them, or you know, they'll blow you up while you're sitting down having a conversation with somebody, trying to bring people together and unite people and trying to cut through lies and get to truth. And I'm saying this as somebody who should probably hate those people. I'll give you an example of just one that comes off the top of my head, Charlie Kirk. I should hate Charlie Kirk. He's a Christian. He's a statist. I am an atheist. I am an anarchist. There's nothing that he should be supporting or talking about that I should support and believe in and believe that he has the right to speak about and that it's a good idea. Not only that he has the right to speak about it, but that it's ultimately a good idea, then he should be talking about it, and it's something that needs to be a conversation that needs to be had. But I didn't. I don't. I found his conversations to be honest and truthful and to the point, and they were more about liberty and individualism and empowering people than they were about the state or his religious convictions. And that's what I take away from it, and that's what I think to mean to be more important. And, of course, the news came out in this time that, you know, this time that we haven't been together here, last couple of weeks, and news came out, and it was, I knew the second it happened, I knew it. They said, the bullet doesn't match. Bullet that killed Charlie Kirk doesn't match the gun that they say was the one that fired it. And of course, I know that immediately that source is not a good source of information, because, you know, without even looking, anybody with a brain, anybody who is not biased, anybody who is not looking for a conspiracy but is just looking for the truth and can find conspiracy, anybody that is being honest about the Charlie Kirk situation and about things that could or couldn't happen with bullets and ballistics and all of this that is tied into it, you know that the language that was actually used was that it wasn't a match. Now, that's not the language that they used. It's that it was inconclusive, that the match was inconclusive. And there are any number of reasons for that. And I'm not going to go into them. I'm not going to argue it. I'm not going to try to debate whether or not what we have been told about the murder of Charlie Kirk is true. I don't care because it doesn't make any difference. If it's a state-sponsored murder, then we're all screwed. There's nothing that any of us can do because we're all targets and then we can all be killed at any time. And that's a reality and it's a possibility. And so there you go. Why even bother to talk about it? The important part is not that he was murdered. The important part, you know, it may be important to some people. I'm sure it would be important to him if he were here to possibly argue the point. But I think that he actually would argue with me that the actual point of it is not his murder, but why he was murdered. It's not about who murdered him. It's why he was murdered or what is presented as why he was murdered. The division, the idea that what he was saying, the things that he was saying, the conversations that he was having, the topics that he was bringing up were wrong, that they were conversations that shouldn't be being had and that they're offensive and that having those conversations is tantamount to hating other people in an action, you know, in an actionable way going. And it's crazy because the left always does this. And I'm no defender of the right, but the right just doesn't tend to go around doing this stuff. Maybe not as often or as overtly. It's a very weird thing with the authoritarianism as understood on the right versus what it's understood on the left. And it has something to do with this idea that the swastika is a worse symbol than the sickle and hammer. Because the sickle and hammer, of course, is the communist logo and then the Nazi logo for the Nazi party in Germany. And while, you know, it gets a pass. There was an article I read not too long ago about this particular subject that it gets a pass. And this hammer and sickle gets a pass that the swastika wouldn't, and it has a lot to do with who writes the history. It has a lot to do with who was on whose side at the time. Everybody was against the Nazis, so the socialists and the Democrats, the democracy, the places where you could find democracy. In case anybody's wondering, so the words communist and socialist are so interchanged that they gets lost in the meaning and the understanding of them gets lost in the meaning. But ultimately, the counter to socialism was capitalism and the free markets in the Western world and the democracies of the world. And so they set out to do their thing when they paired up with the socialists because the socialists were really the ones that were in danger from the Nazis. And they defeated them, and so socialism continues in large places, in large nations, and the documentation of it is different. The documentation of socialism versus Nazism is different. There are, you know, all of these stories and details and historical record about the things that the communists have done, but they've been fairly well wiped clean. They've been whitewashed. Because those regimes still exist and because communism sounds good on paper. Socialism sounds good on paper. These ideas, well, democracy sounds good on paper. Please, let's not pretend that America isn't a socialist state. And that's what I was talking about, the difference between the communism and socialism that gets mixed up so many times. And if you want, I'll give you a way to clarify it. You can take it or leave it for what it is. But I'll give you a way to clarify it going forward if somebody is confused about what you're talking about or if you're even confused about what you're talking about and you'd like to maybe clarify your own thoughts in your head. Communism is the political organization. Socialism is the economic organization. And the counters to those are the democracy or the republic in the counter of communism. as a political system, as political systems, and then, of course, capitalism versus socialism. So those are the political ideologies. So you can, they're all really fairly well interchangeable except for communism. Communism is not compatible with capitalism, but all the rest of them are compatible with each other, including democracy, because democracy is just socialism with permission from the people who are getting robbed. That's really all it is. It's the people that pretend like they have a say in how their money is managed and who is taking their money and where it goes, and they don't. They pretend like they do, but they don't. They have no real actual say in it. And so we have so much going on to try to even be able to keep up with it, but there's a few things that are always issues that you can talk about. One of them is socialism and communism and how closely related those things are to our democracy, and how far those things are away from our capitalism. The notion that you and I get to make our own decisions with our wealth. Nothing beyond that. There's, you know, it's our capital and that we get to use it as we see fit, and that there's no other caveat with that. How it's used, why it's used, these aren't the things that matter. It's that there's a free exchange of them, and it's expected that, you know, other parties can't involve themselves in our exchanges. That's that simple notion of it. And it's sad that I have to explain that, because immediately, as soon as I start talking about capitalism in a positive way, there's some idiot, especially some idiot anarchist, somebody who thinks they know the answers, they have all the solutions, except they have absolutely zero answers or solutions for any of the problems other than violence and wealth redistribution, which is just what the state already does. So you're not an anarchist, you're just a statist who disagrees with the current state. Any of those idiots could be telling you any number of ideas and suggesting that they're wrong and that capitalism, you know, as soon as you start talking about it, they're raising their hands saying, but what about this? What about that? All of those things, all of those what ifs, those are all circumstantial things that have nothing to do with capitalism itself. There's no particular need or reason to have those things associated with capitalism, because they follow capitalism. They don't lead capitalism. Capitalism is the baseline for the idea that you and I have the right to exchange our and to grow our own wealth and develop our own wealth as we see fit without other parties interfering with that. And on that level, that's that base level. It comes first. What you do, what somebody does with their wealth, please, isn't our president a perfect example of this? He's just some rich douchebag who's managed to capture the presidency through his popularity for no other reason, because voters are complete morons. They're stupid. They have no clue about what's going on in the world. And that's why the citizenship test and things like it, and the idea that voters should have citizenship tests, that our students should have citizenship tests, that they should be better citizens, is just a seriously faulty notion. It's almost comically laughable, really, if you stop to break down what a citizenship test is and what civics really means, at least in terms of what it means in an educational position. So civics, being civic-minded when you're outside of the education system, is an entirely different thing. It's an action. It's something that you're doing, and there's positive, presumably, work that can be pointed to that shows what you are doing civically to promote community and promote good ideas within your community. That's entirely separate from sitting down at a piece of paper and having that piece of paper suggest that citizenship is based on a knowledge base, that there's a knowledge base that comes with citizenship. And I don't mean a knowledge base of how to use a tool or how to turn on farm equipment or how to hunt or, you know, anything. Nothing. It's like these these ridiculous actors and actresses, people who do nothing. That's what actors and actors are. Actors and actresses are. They're people who do nothing. Yes, they created their wealth, and they may have wealth, and they may have done something with it afterward. The positive aspects of post-capitalism, it's still capitalism. It's still the idea they're still exchanging their wealth for what they want to see in the world, whether it's for themselves or through someone else or some activity or something they support. These actors and actresses pretending like they're better than the artwork that they represent. These are people who come in and somebody comes along and writes something and creates something and does all of this massive amount of work. All of these things that the actor couldn't do. The actor couldn't do your job. Most actors are morons. They're lucky if they can memorize the lines that they have. A lot of them are actors and actresses because they couldn't do anything else. And you hear them say it all the time, and it's tongue-in-cheek, whatever. No, it's not. It's not really. They're admitting that they're useless at doing anything else. I say it in terms of maybe what other people's expectations are, because that's the problem, right? You, as an actor, if you're doing what you want to do and you're happy and you're making a success of yourself and other people are happy and they're buying your product and everything, that's fine. That's perfectly acceptable. There's nothing wrong with that idea. But of course, the idea is that if you are that person, that if you're not somebody else, something, I don't know what. I'm not sure who the magic person is. It shifts from one person to the next that you speak with. You know, some people worship celebrities. Some people worship politicians. Some people worship this sort of blue collar worker. None of these things are true. All of these things are true. None of them changes the other. None of them has any bearing on the other. They're all just opinions that people have. There's nothing important about them at all. But you have these actors and actresses come in and they say, these people that do nothing, they come in and they memorize other people's work and they spit it back out, and the cameraman does all the work and the director does all the work and the set people and the prop people, and they do all this work that the actor couldn't possibly do, wouldn't be able to do their job without. It wouldn't be the same. Just some dude standing and monologuing on a stage is different than a full-fledged performance of people and places. And it's filmed, and you have all these people running around doing all these other jobs. The actor and the actress is almost the least important part of it all, because none of that other stuff is in place, it doesn't matter what the actor or actress does. So listen, we don't want to hear them talk about politics. We don't want to hear them talk about money. We don't want to hear them talk about anything except entertaining me. And you'll have somebody like a Hannah Einbender, who was out this, sort of last week or whatever, running on about AI and hating on AI and the creators, more specifically the creators who are using particular AI tools to do things like generate images or to generate language and speech and scripts or stories or what have you. She's bashing these people, and she doesn't understand that she, just to begin with, again, she's in no position to tell anybody anything. She's nobody. Who cares? She's the least important person in a society. There's no less important. There are so many other ways to get entertainment and to get information than the actor and the actress regurgitating it to you. You can go back to the source. So right to begin with, she has no ground to stand on whatsoever. But then she's talking about something that she doesn't understand on top of that. She's talking about the artistic aspect of it and the creative aspect of it. And she has no idea what she's talking about. None whatsoever. She doesn't know anything about the people who have been put out of work or who haven't been put out of work. She doesn't understand that the difference between creativity and time is, you know, a sacrifice. That's it. It's a sacrificing time of doing other things to put it to creativity. And so creativity is no special thing. It's just what somebody decides to do when they don't want to or aren't capable of doing other things. So get tired of hearing these artists and these so-called creative people and the writers talk about AI the way they do when they don't understand it, let alone some third-party person that is way down the line of people who are making anything happen in any sense of creativity, the actors and actresses themselves. So when you're talking about the AI thing and these people are bashing it, they don't understand what it does for people like me, what it does for any number of people around the world who absolutely can do everything they can do. I can do everything that actors can do, and I can do everything the stagehands can do, and I can do everything that the director can do, and the editor, and the producer, and all this. I am a true creative, but I don't have the time to spend on wasting my life creating pretty pictures for other people to maybe or maybe not like while I try to feed my family. And then pretend like what I do is important or better or somebody else couldn't do it or, God forbid, a machine could come along and do it. I've explained to you that machines have been doing my job for a long time. Machines have been conveying information, including being the voice of information for a very, very long time, and they haven't put me out of work, pursuing a creative pursuit. I'm that guy. I'm the one that you can look at and say who's a creative person who is also a technological person that can put these things into perspective. And so it's just another one of these people with a failure to understand, one of many, with a failure to understand what a tool means to somebody else and what advancing the idea of creativity means. It means that I, as somebody who is trying to run a business, don't have to go out and seek out a creative person that doesn't recognize timelines, charges too much money, gets upset when you don't like their product the way they presented it to you. You want something different. Trust me, going through all of this, working with people to create something for you that you don't have can be a huge pain and just hard to do, just even hard to accomplish in and of itself, reaching the right people, getting the right people to do it, paying of an amount of money that's reasonable. You know, you're investing, so someone like me, who has a business, and it's an important business. It's a good business. It's something that a community needs. It's a place to come and get reading materials and learn about reading and creativity. And I spotlight all these creative people that I have a problem with. And I share their work and I sell their works and I promote their ideas while they sit there and complain about the tools that have made it possible for them to do it. I'm this guy. I'm that guy that you can look at that has that understanding of the technology and the creativity at the same time. And I get the idea of the difference between tools. And yeah, there's a lot of other conversations in there and a lot of other things that can be talked about and the dangers of AI. Not a monolith, a bunch of different things doing a bunch of different tasks run by a bunch of different people. But how it ties into this sort of politics and the citizenship test is that it just shows just because a person has a great big mouth doesn't mean that the information that they have is particularly important, that the time that they've spent learning is particularly important. These creatives themselves have their own problems, and then the zero creatives come in and top it off and try to You're trying to make some sort of political or social statement about these things. They want controls. They want protections. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about squeaky wheels that are about to get the grease because they're not capable of doing anything else. They're not capable of excelling beyond the machine. They're not capable of realizing that because it is math, because it is just lines and it is all just subjective, that it's not that hard to duplicate. Anybody can create art and anybody can potentially like art. Most people who create art never become famous. Their works never sell. They never make money at it. It's something that they do because they love to do it. They're not expecting somebody else to fund their ability to create art. They create art when they can and as they can. And that's what's more important. And those people are much more respectable than the people who actually sell their art, the people who are successful at their art, because those people at some point, if you're telling me now, 100 years after comic books have become a thing, that you are the guy who writes and draws comic books and you do it better than anybody else and nobody can do it like you. So you never read another comic book, you never looked at anybody else's art, you never studied anybody else's words, you didn't learn how to do what you do. I very highly doubt it. I doubt very seriously because there is, you know, these talents, these skills, these are things that are misnomers. You're not born with these things. You may have a certain the predilection for them, maybe some draw to it in your DNA, but there's nothing in our DNA that says this person's going to be an artist and this person's not. This person's going to be able to draw. No, it takes practice. If you want to draw well and people to respect what you draw, it takes practice. It takes work. And there's a whole body of work that exists before you going all the way back to cavemen that you don't get to ignore, that you don't get to pretend like you didn't see it, like you didn't go to the museum, like you didn't see somebody else's work and were inspired by it and made something that was almost exactly like it and you didn't make a thing for it. You didn't make a dime for it. Nor if you did, didn't you just steal somebody else's work? Didn't you just steal somebody else's idea? Aren't you just being derivative? Enough is enough. Stop it. Creatives, please put yourself in check and get some perspective for yourselves. What you do is not important to anyone but you. I hate to say it as somebody who plays multiple instruments, who knows how to draw, who does draw, who can sculpt out of clay and has done some painting and it is a creative through and through and has been all his life. I can say it because I'm objective about what we're talking about in terms of the value of it. And I think that it's an amazing thing that artists and creatives do, that they overvalue and undervalue themselves at the exact same time. It's an amazing thing. So many things that I could be talking about, but what I really want to get into is this idea of the citizenship test. It's an anarchist audit, that's what I call it. And I'm just going to, through being a good citizen, not even the citizenship test itself, although I will focus on that because it makes a lot of points, but the idea of the good citizen, what is a good citizen, what makes a good citizen, I don't think anybody really knows except for the state as it recognizes an individual citizen who has done something pro-state. That's about it, because there are some things that a good citizen could be doing one day that's perfectly fine and recognizable and understood, and then the next day it could be completely illegal, whether it's just from a regime or from an actual law change. So what makes a good citizen is definitely up for grabs. So let's talk about – so the impetus behind this, what brought me to this, is because it's happening in my backyard. So there are 14, 15 states now that have some kind of citizenship test or civics test requirement for students to graduate. Kansas was trying to pass one, and they just did. They just passed it the other day, and so now it's a law. That bill became a law. He sat on the steps of the Capitol there for so long, and eventually they made him into a law. And so here we are. We have this law now in Kansas that beginning of next school year, everyone graduating will have to pass this citizenship test. And that's a scary thought for a number of reasons. But let's have some history. Let's talk about that as well. So obviously what we're talking about here is just another made-up metric, right? It's just another phony metric for the state to measure and control people, to class them in order to exert more control or less control over a particular group, or to demonize a group that they don't want to be a part of the state, in you know, non-citizens, people that don't speak the language, people of different color. You know, it's a way to keep them out. And so it wasn't even until 1986 that a citizenship test was even formally introduced. It had been around for some 40 years, a holdover from the Cold War, you know, trying to keep out socialists, trying to keep out communists, trying to keep out you know, remaining Nazis, I suppose. That they did. Isn't that funny how we were teamed up with the socialists to beat back the Nazis, and then went into a war that lasted for decades and killed many more people than the Nazis ever did, battling against socialism in the Cold War. And even then, another 11 years went by before somebody looked at it, or forced the state to look at it, and Congress looked at it, and they did this congressional report where they recognized that there wasn't anything substantive to the citizenship tests, that it was just memorization of useless facts. That's how I'd put it. And that's ultimately what they were saying, but they won't use words like that because they don't want things that they want it to work, but they want to find the space that it sounds like it works best. So they don't want to throw a language like that in there, memorization of useless facts. They don't want you to believe that the facts are useless. But so here's the scary thing about it, if you will. And so they're trying to make the graduating high school students pass a citizenship test. Well, it's been a little while, but the last time somebody looked at it, it seems that about 20% of people under the age of about 50 or so would pass the one of these tests. 20%, but the actual average is 90%. 90% of applicants pass because the bar is set really low. It's absolutely a low bar. It's a D grade to pass. So less than 20% of people in sort of 40s to 50s, under 40 or 50 years of age, wouldn't pass this thing. That's crazy. If the goal is to suggest that the reason we need the civics test is, one, that they're being taught these things in school, and so that they need to know them as they're exiting, but two, that it's some kind of marker that there's a larger argument here that can be ignored, that if 90% of applicants pass, well, the test must not be too hard. And does it make them better citizens, right? That's the question. Because wouldn't the people in that 40 to 45 age range and older automatically be better citizens, right? supposedly we should be better citizens. And if we're better citizens at that age and can pass the test, because that's what determines that we're better citizens, right, is how you pass the test. So if we can pass the test and most people after us can't pass the test, what does that say about the education system? Well, it says that the education system is not teaching these things. Well, what have we been trying to do with the education system for the last 50 years? Get it to teach things that are important, right? Get it to teach things that people can actually use when they leave the school. So can we use citizenship knowledge, I guess, would be the question. Is there knowledge within citizenship, or the idea of citizenship, or the knowledge of citizenship itself? Does it make us better people? Does it make for a better state? Does it make us smarter people? Well, if it's just useless facts and memorization, it seems like probably not. The test questions are made available to everyone. Originally, the entire selection, but now it's a test of that is derived from a larger subset of questions. So at the time that there was a smaller subset of questions, you could just go and you would study to the test and learn the test. Now there's a larger, after the congressional report, now there's this larger base of questions to choose from. So you have to memorize more. But it's just that. It's rote memorization that's all that's required to pass it. It's just getting lucky on the odds of having memorized the thing that they're going to ask you about at the time. So there's nothing particularly hard about the question format itself, but what about the questions? And remember, this is all being forced on us by the state, by politicians, to make us better citizens, supposedly. So the kinds of questions that are on a citizenship test are literally things like, what colors are the flag? Well, red, white, and blue, we got that one. It's a nice and easy one. We're well on our way to passing the test. What is the White House? It's a house. It's white. It's where the president's at. Tough stuff, right? Really tough questions that really cause a person to think deep about the universe and their surroundings. And This is a citizenship test, not any other test of anything ever. What is the supreme law of the land? That's a question asked. The supreme law of the land is the Constitution, right? That's what we say. So that question is almost entirely meaningless. The government doesn't follow the Constitution. And the Bill of Rights is almost completely ignored. Certainly, circumstantially, in any individual case that's brought against somebody, you know, Second Amendment or something like that, self-defense, excuse me, it's ignored. It's ignored. So that's not only a stupid question that's meaningless. It's a stupid, meaningless question that actually ends up going nowhere, because the idea of the answer itself isn't even true. Yeah, the Constitution's the supreme law of the land. When the states decide that they don't want to follow it, then it just goes out the window. When the federal government doesn't want to follow it, it just goes out the window. They prosecute you. They find a way. They rewrite it. They do whatever they want to. They give you a litmus test. They give you a citizenship test and tell you if you can't pass a citizenship test that you don't have any standing, that you don't have any rights. That's one thing they want to say is that, you know, if you're not a citizen, you don't have any rights. But rights aren't for citizens. There's not a single caveat within the Bill of Rights that suggests that it's Americans, American people, white people, men, not brown people, only dudes, not chicks, only people that own land, not poor. You know, those kind of people out there. It's laughable. It's truly laughable. Let's see, what else is in there? What part of the federal government writes laws? Congress. And so this is another one of these questions, just like the previous one, that who cares? What? So there's truth to it. It doesn't do me any good. The next time I take a civics test, maybe something good will come of it. But until then, it's nothing. It's useless. It's pointless. It means nothing. Nobody's ever going to ask me that question. That question will never have any importance in our reality whatsoever. Maybe to the politician or to the lawmaker, that person that becomes one of those people, maybe, just maybe, it would matter to them. But how many times has somebody been up there on Capitol Hill in front of Congress or something like that, in front of one of these committees, something along those lines, and somebody has asked them, well, what are the branches of government? What are the three branches of government? And they can name two of them. And these are already the people that are the politicians. These are already the people that are in there, and they're not going to get any better. Well, because the argument is, I heard Joe Rogan say something about this the other day. He was, I watched his conversation with Arsenio Hall, and I heard Joe say that a two-party system is a problem, and he's wrong. The two-party system is not the problem. It doesn't just limit things, and that's ultimately what he's saying. Oh, we should have 5 or 10 people to choose from because then we have more choice. No, you don't. Why do you have more choice? You're taking people from the same pool. Oh, you pulled these politicians, these people that are going to run, from the same pool of people. So there's not any particular difference in them. That's the same with the voters. If you alter the age of voting, or if you put some litmus test in there to suggest that vote, you know, you should have to pass a citizenship test or something before you can vote. It turns out being the same thing. It turns out being just a pointless exercise in minimizing. Well, it's pointless for us. It's not pointless for the system. If the system can minimize the number of people required to suggest that it is a valid system and that it can keep running, that's what it wants to do. It wants to reduce the number of people who can participate in the system legally, and because, for whatever reason, because it suits them, because the less percentage of the population that is actually showing up at the polls and saying, yes, you have permission to do these things by giving them your vote, whatever the system does, you've given them permission, whoever it is. This is the problem, Joe Rogan. This is the problem. The problem is democracy. It's not the number of people that you have to choose to vote from, because the number of people are still the same people. It's still the same pool of people voting. It's still the same pool of people from the same education system, with the same political and social ideology in terms of the greatness of America and democracy and the republic and all of these things that don't exist. Totally fake. Nothing but pieces of paper to suggest that they exist. They're just ideas. They're not real things, not for real people. Most real people have no use for them whatsoever. In fact, we try to get away from and try to avoid them because it's nothing but theft. It's the welfare class. It's nothing but the welfare class. That's the political class. When I say the welfare class, it's all of the political class. It's the voters. It's the politicians themselves mostly. And then it's the constituents of the politicians that get the handouts. They're all welfare whores. They're all stealing the wealth from the rest of us to fund themselves. Because if you think actors are useless, worthless people, politicians are the most useless, worthless people, except when they have power and they can actually affect change and they damage people's lives. Because that's all government does, is it steals from one group of people to give to another group of people, depending on the whim of whoever is in charge of the political system at the time. That's it. That's all that government is. So these civics tests, these litmus tests, they're not going to make anything better. The problem, Joe Rogan, is not that there aren't enough people to choose from on the voting rolls or enough people on the voting rolls to make the choices, however you want to look at it. Either one of those things is perfectly true. The fact is that the real problem is democracy. The real problem is the idea that you can take something that you don't have, give it over to a collective, and now the collective has the power to rob, cage, or murder anyone, anytime they see fit because they said so. That's it. Because they said so. Not because of tradition, not because America, not because red, white, and blue, not because patriots, because some goddamn politician says so. Or some authoritarian piece of crap says so. That's the only reason. Only reason. That's it. If you're going to take a test, if you're going to give people a test to come here to America or to pass their graduation, how about a competency test? How about a skill set test? How about just a questionnaire that says, hey, are you capable of doing anything, you idiot? Can you set aside your ego and all your imagination and all the other crap that you would wield in front of reality and just set it aside, look at reality, can you answer any of the questions? And are the answers to the questions anything important? Were the questions important themselves? Can you do anything? Are you capable of doing anything at all? Well, we've found out that the schools can't test these things, that the testing doesn't prove or disprove any of these things. So none of these things actually do it. No litmus test. But you could at least suggest that somebody demonstrate some kind of skill, something other than just rote memorization, because that's exactly what you're looking at. You're not looking at anything else. 60% is a passing grade. So it's a great use of useless trivia to shape America that you only have to get 60% right. You can miss 40%. Almost half of everything that comes out of your mouth could be wrong, and you're still a good citizen. Wow, what a low bar. Citizen must not be a very good, great thing that somebody would actually want to be, because, wow, what a low bar. The Constitution allowed or failed to prevent what we had here from the government that exists from the people who were called good citizens. Not the people who are coming up now that aren't good citizens, but the people who already exist, the people who have been through the system. You want to blame the problems with civics and civic-minded people in that sense on anything or anyone? You blame it on the government. The government is the one that said that we have all of these things in place and all of these wonderful ideas and all of this money and all of this skill and all of this talent and everything that we have in America, and it's all going to be pulled together and we're going to make it great. Well, they haven't. They haven't made a single thing great. They've made it worse. They've made it continually worse. Everything that they've done is to enrich themselves and empower themselves while keeping us at best at the same levels, at worst, stealing from us and turning us into a middle classless society. These are all considerations for what is happening out there based on questions like, who is the vice president? I'll tell you who the vice president is. Who he is to me, he's the next prick in line to screw me over as leader of the free world. That's what the vice president is to me. That's it. Means nothing. He's a nobody. He's a politician. He's scum. And this one is a really just a fat, weird, ugly scum at that. I don't want to go to personal attacks, but this is the government that we have. This is the society that we have that attacking someone for their political stance and actually calling them out for their political problems doesn't do anything. It doesn't fix anything. But if you can make them into a hater of something superficial, or if you can point something out about them that's superficial, if you can call Christie a fat bastard and destroy his political career after all the criminal crap that he did up to that point, then we have a sort of a backward look at what's important, I would think. I mean, that's a very mild way of putting it. You know, more questions about, like, Abraham Lincoln or something, asking who's Abraham Lincoln and what's he famous for, you know, freeing the slaves and he saved the Union and he led the United States during the war. You know, those are definitely three things about Lincoln, and they're all three things that are relatively true, but they're actually all three things that are not true. He had very little to do with freeing the slaves. He waged war on the South and claimed it was about the slaves, but it was actually about economics. And while he was saying, you know, free the slaves over here to one group of people, he's saying to another group of people, if I could stop the war without freeing a single slave, I would. So he didn't care about slavery. He didn't free the slaves. That's not what he did. He just managed America while it fought and slavery was on the table. It was one of many issues to be discussed and had the conversation of. But it just tells you that there's not a lot of critical thinking, because we know all this time later that Lincoln and who cares? Who cares? This just doesn't make this knowledge, this trivia. It's no better than knowing how many home runs Babe Ruth had in his lifetime. I don't know what it is. Lots of people do, and none of those people are doing anything important with that information. So my not knowing it means absolutely nothing. They might be doing something important for themselves, maybe something important for their employer if they're in the sports industry, or if their employer is in the sports industry. Sure, that would be. But other than that, no, it's completely useless information. Same with the civics information. Completely useless to anybody outside of civics and completely useless inside civics, as is referenced. I said it before. As is, you can see how many times somebody's been brought up before Congress or one of these panels or something, and they can't answer basic questions about the organization of America, who makes the laws and who does what, what's the judicial system, what's the judicial branch, what are they, you know. It's just a silly little thing that they'd ask these questions. How many people are in the House of Representatives? Well, the answer is 435, right? And all of them are willing, lying thieves. And some of them are even complicit in murder and war crimes. Wow, what great information about great people to know. So important to know that information. It's so important. It's such nonsense. It so speaks to the idea, again, like I was saying about the socialism earlier, it's in the idea of who wins the wars and who writes the history. America is made to sound great through things like a civics test. Outside of that, America is just another collapsing state with a bunch of criminals and scumbags at the head of it trying to fleece the rest of us for as much as they can before we catch up with them and hang their sorry asses. What difference does it make how our legal system works if it's just to give the state power and wealth through the constant threat and accusation of violation of political and social opinions that are enforced by people who benefit from the system? That's what you're looking at. That's what your civics test does at best. That's what the good citizen is. They're nobody. They're a fallacy. They don't exist. They're something that's put on pieces of paper to suggest that there's a better way, and that better way is the system, and that if you don't know the system, you're never going to find that better way. You're never going to be the person who excels. You're never going to be the good citizen. In fact, you'll just be a bad Roman. A little shout out to Craig Hargis and the Bad Roman podcast. Look, that's it for me. I gotta go. But if you're on the network, stick around. A fantastic interview coming up. For the rest of you, visit towardanarchy.com and click that like button, and we'll see you next time.
When you see the greed and the concentration of power within, did you ever have a moment of doubt about capitalism and whether greed's a good idea to run on?
Well, first of all, tell me, is there some society you know that doesn't run on greed? You think Russia doesn't run on greed? You think China doesn't run on greed? What is greed? Of course, none of us are greedy. It's only the other fellow who's greedy.
That's right.
The world runs on individuals pursuing their separate interests. The great achievements of civilization have not come from government bureaus. Einstein didn't construct his theory under order from a bureaucrat. Henry Ford didn't revolutionize the automobile industry that way. In the only cases in which the masses have escaped from the kind of grinding poverty you're talking about, the only cases in recorded history are where they have had capitalism and largely free trade. If you want to know where the masses are worst off, it's exactly in the kinds of societies that depart from that. So that the record of history is absolutely crystal clear.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy.